కపిలోచృహమేదియాన్ A grihasta is a person who lives with family, wife, children, and relatives, but has no attachment for them. He prefers to live in family life rather than as a mendicant or sannyasi, but his chief aim is to achieve self-realization or to come to the standard of Krishna consciousness. Here, however, Lord Kapiladeva is speaking about the Grihamedis, who have made their aim the materialistically prosperous life, which they achieve by sacrificial ceremony, by charities, and by good work. They are posted in good positions, and since they know that they are using up their assets of pious activities, they gain and again perform activities of sense gratification. It is said by Prahlad Maharaj, punas punas charvita charvanam, they prefer to chew the already chewed. Again and again they experience the material pangs, even if they are rich and prosperous, but they do not give up this kind of life. Translation of the personality of Godhead says, a person who lives in the center of household life derives material benefits by performing religious rituals and thereby fulfills his desire for economic development and sense gratification. Again and again, he acts the same way. So we see here by this description that this person is performing dharma. It's a householder. So it says, Kaman, Artam, Dharmam, Swan. He enjoys the benefits of these three things. Which means he's actually, to some extent, following the path of Karma Yoga. and Varnashram system. In the Varnashram system, of course, there's necessarily some worship of the Supreme Lord. But we'll see here that this person is so overcome by attachment to material enjoyment that this worship of the Supreme Lord is actually very little, and the proportion of time spent for other activities for sense gratification is much more. So, therefore, we can say it is Varnashram, and it is bona fide in karma yoga, etc. At the same time, this chapter condemns this position. Why? Because the person does benefit, and that he does not commit sinful activities because he's following the rules of Dharma. And he also elevates because he goes to Svarga Loka, which means he actually does a lot of punyas and follows the scriptures exactly, avoids sinful activity. He ends up in sattva, he controls the senses. And he goes to Svarga Loka. And then, of course, he comes down again. So this actually is a condemnation of karma yoga. The previous chapters were concerned with the tamagun person. That person goes to hell. That's because he doesn't follow any rules and regulations, and he commits a lot of sinful activities. So he ends up in hell, and then he gets stuck in a womb, and he gets born again. So this person, of course, is preferable. So this is the person in Rajagun doing Sakama Karma. Now, of course, there are other people who are in Rajagun who don't follow Varnashram also. But they will very quickly tend to get into Tamagun because they don't follow rules. And then because of that, then they go to hell also. So anyway, the person in Rajagun can maintain his position by performing the activities according to the rules and regulations, and he can actually get up to somewhat to Sattva-gun, let's say the border between Rajagun and Sattva-gun. But he doesn't actually get into Sattva-gun, because if you go to Sattva-gun, then you have to give up your desires. The quality of Sattva is that one has much less material desires, and then one develops Atma-gyan. So this person here, not interested in Atma-gyan. He's interested in coming back to the material world again and again and enjoying. So this is an unfortunate person. The whole Varnashram system is meant for advancement, and to go from Rajagun to Sattva-gun and then get liberation or get bhakti. This person misuses the whole system and ends up taking repeated birth and death. Now this is preferable to the sinful person who doesn't follow Varnashram and ends up in lower species of life, etc., which was described previously. So this person, because he does follow Dharma, at least he ends up as a human being and he practices Dharma in the next life and he continues in this way. But this is also called the path of darkness in the Bhagavad Gita in chapter 8, where the two paths are described. The person who dies during the full moon or the dark moon, and in the Uttarayan or the Dakshinayan, etc. This is actually describing the person involved in karma, the path of darkness, or the path of light, that is, going for liberation or devotion, either way. So the path of darkness is condemned. So even following the Vedic rules, in one sense, is that is following karma, karma yoga, that is also condemned as a path of darkness, because the person has a tendency to get caught up in this and he never advances. It is for this reason also that Narada Muni condemned or criticized Vyasadeva's writing of the Puranas, because he wrote Puranas in Tamagun, Rajagun, Sattva-gun. That is for Tamagun people, Rajagun people, Sattva-gun people, and he encouraged them to follow Dharma according to the gunas. And he criticized because people will get stuck and they'll be like this. And when they finally discover how to enjoy in the material world, they get stuck in that position and they won't go any further. In other words, they won't advance beyond Rajagun. They won't get to sattva and then develop spiritual insight, etc. So, therefore, it's rejected. The alternative is, that's the good alternative, is to begin practicing the system and raise up from tamagun to rajagun and then come to sattvagun. And to do that, one has to do nishkama karma, not sakama karma. And this is what is advised in Bhagavad Gita, finally. Of course, Krishna also mentions sakama karma in chapter 3. But then, better than that is nishkama karma. Do the dharma, but don't be attached to these results. So that's the step above sakama karma. It is advised because in this way, one continues with the same rules and one doesn't have to change. Usually people are very lazy and they don't like to change and do something else and learn something new. So this way, they don't have to learn anything new. Okay? Birth after birth, they follow the same rules and regulations, but they then develop detachment from the goals, the material goals, and they just do the activities without desiring results in terms of svarga loka or material enjoyment. So in other words, the attachment to kama and artha is much less. So they practice dharma. So why do they practice dharma at all then? What was the whole purpose? Duty. It's one, let us follow duty because scripture tells us to do this. So by doing that, of course, then they control their senses. They develop a practice of controlling their senses. And so they develop detachment from material enjoyment. Of course, it may take many births to do this. So then they become indifferent to the material world. So that is a good position in sattva, because then, in sattva, they begin to inquire about atma. The person will understand he's not actually the material body, and the bliss is not to enjoy with the material body. And then he begins to inquire about atma. So in other words, Gyan becomes prominent at the stage of sattva. So he can continue his activities and at the same time take up the practice of Gyan and become interested in liberation. That's described actually in chapter 29. It describes sattva-gun bhakti. The person actually is interested in liberation, follows the duties of varnashram, etc. Why is it called bhakti? Because there's a little bhakti there. As I said, there's a little worship of the Supreme Lord even in this, but it is rather insignificant, and their desire is to enjoy, so therefore the Lord gives them the enjoyment. So, when they come to sattva, and then they become, follow the rules and regulations, plus they are interested in liberation and jnana, they're also performing a little bhakti there also. As a result of this, because of the power of bhakti, the Lord will fulfill their desire, and he will give them liberation eventually. And that's described actually later on in this chapter also. Entanglement, fruit of activities, and then finally, if when they get to sattva, they can elevate themselves up to Brahmaloka. And then they go to Brahmaloka, and if they have developed complete attachment to the material world, when Brahma dies, they go with Brahma, and they get liberation. Or if they're lucky, and they practice more bhakti, then they can actually go to Vaikuntha. But in any case, even this is not the ideal system, because this is Gyan Mr. Bhakti, because it's a desire for liberation. So it is not the best position. It is better than Jnana. The other position is this person, when he gets from karma to nishkama karma, then he goes to sattva, then he can do nishkama karma with a little bhakti. And again, this is not the best, because it's still karma Mr. Bhakti again. So that person also gets some benefit. The other thing he can do is he can just be predominantly jnani. He become a jnani. And give up the karma part and just do jnana. Be a jnani yogi instead of karma yogi. And give up even the nishkama karma and just do jnana. But with a little bhakti. But then he gets liberation. Sayuja Mukti.
So these are the different alternatives for the people rising up in the material world. Why would they choose one or the other? By association. By association with others, they will pick up jnana or nishkama, karma mis, or bhakti or whatever. So in this way, they get various destinations. They may get liberation, if they're lucky, that jnana mis, or bhakti can actually go to the spiritual world and have shantarasa. But all of this also is not really the perfection. This is all condemned. So the real thing is to take to the process of bhakti. And though this whole system here is worked out for the people to get elevation, it is a slow process. And the quicker process is simply to practice bhakti. And you may or may not do varnashram and dharma and karma yoga or jnana or whatever. Without it, it's fine. There is no sin attached to it if one rejects everything and simply does bhakti. One may do the other things also, but one should not have attachment, so it has to be very nishkama. So for instance, even in Bhagavad Gita, we have jnana, and we have to understand we're not the soul, a body, we're the soul, etc. That's jnana, basically. But the devotee is more interested in worshipping and developing love for the Supreme Lord. So that's the major process. Everything else may or may not be done. So bhakti does not depend on karma yoga or jnana yoga or astanga yoga or anything, even though all these things are mentioned in the Bhagavatam also. Bhakti is completely independent of these things. We can do them, but we should be careful that they don't contaminate the bhakti, or we can just simply do bhakti. And that's the preferable method that Krishna gives, and therefore he says Sarvadharman Parijaja Mamekam Sharanam Braja. So therefore the spiritual process becomes very simple. This looks a little complicated because you have to go through this whole system birth after birth and gradually elevate. So the other way is simply to take to the process of bhakti. And even one is Tamaguna, Rajaguna, whatever, if one has mercy of devotees, one can begin pure bhakti and destroy the tamaguna and rajaguna and sattvaguna. And in this way one surpasses all the other processes. So this is actually the recommendation of Kapila Dev in the Bhagavatam, chapter 25, 29, here at the end of this chapter. And in the last chapter, the whole section where Devahuti actually goes to Vaikuntha. How does she do it? Not by any of these processes described in these chapters, but by pure bhakti. She's completely detached. She doesn't do any karma. She doesn't do any yoga. She doesn't do anything. She simply practices bhakti, and she attains the result. So that is the final message of Kapila Dev, that bhakti is the process one should follow. That, of course, was the question of Devahuti. What should I do? Because I'm suffering in this material world. So then Kapila said, process of bhakti is ultimately the only solution. All these other processes are secondary to that. So this is the final position. So the first part of this chapter discusses this, the sakama karma in rajaguna. So this is inferior. Superior to that is nishkama karma. And then one goes into jnana. Better that the bhakti increases and increases and increases until it becomes bhakti yoga. And it may be karma misra bhakti or jnana misra bhakti, but better than that is pure bhakti. That gives the best. So jnana misra bhakti can lead you to shantarasa in the spiritual world. Karma misra bhakti can lead you to salokya, sarsti, sarupya. And you can enjoy very nicely there with your spiritual body. We have nice facilities there. But higher than both of those is the pure bhakti, and by that, one personally serves the Supreme Lord in dasya, sakya, vatsalya, or madhurya. So that is the recommendation of Kapila Dev. You reject all these things and impure bhakti and karma or jnana misra bhakti and simply perform sudha bhakti. And that is the most satisfying of all.
Nishkarma is bhakti.
No, nishkama karma is, of course bhakti is nishkama, But Nishkama Karma is something different. That is following Varnashram rules without aspiring for Svarga Lopa, etc. We do it out of duty. So it's rather a sattvic process. Yeah? It may have a little, has a little bhakti, definitely has to have a little bhakti, but it is predominantly sattva-gun. So therefore the results will be different from doing pure bhakti.
Pure bhakti means manchaya api janani
bhakti. Yeah. Yeah, even sattva is rejected. That is why Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, sarva dharma prayajaja, give up dharma also.
I think the purpose of a chitta, you know, somebody is doing pious activities.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's a mixture.
Yeah.
If you do both, then you get mixed results. You get you end up in the material world, of course. In some, you may get some advantages because of the piety, and you also get suffering because of the sin. So you come back as a human being and have happiness and stress.
I have two questions. The first one is that in Rishikesh, there's many ashrams that are teaching Hatha Yoga and Ashtanga Yoga. They have female sannyasinis. Mm-hmm. Of course, the goal is Sayuja Mukti.
Uh-huh.
But where would you classify them in your classification?
Ashtanga Yoga is actually superior to Jnana, according to chapter 6 of Bhagavad Gita. So it is also Sattva. Jnana itself, the qualification is Sattva. You have to have gone through the Varnashram system and come to Sattva, and then you develop Atmagyan, etc. So similarly, yoga also has to have that idea of Atmagyan, etc. in it. So it's also a sattva, and it's higher than jnana even. It's more practical. Jnana is more intellectual process, which is not very popular nowadays, I think. Ashtanga yoga is a little more practical in the sense that it uses meditation and pranayama, and etc. to control the mind and stop the with the manasic vrittis, the functioning of the mind, stop all the thought processes like that. So it's also sattva. Both, if they want to be successful and get liberation, they have to have a little bhakti.
They have to have a little bhakti. To whom? To what?
To Vishnu.
Well, but their goal is Sayuja.
Yeah.
When they write me, they say, blessed self.
Yeah. They won't get it. Because Patanjali, in his system, he has Ishvara Pranidhan, worship of Ishvara, Supreme Lord, as one of the, that's in the Niyamas, Yama, Niyama, etc. Niyama is Ishvara Pranidhan. And then, of course, they also worship, meditate on Paramatma.
Or Dhyana. But they're thinking they're going to become Vishwa,
no? Yeah. Well, they can get that. But even to get Sayuja, you have to worship the Supreme Lord.
Yeah.
If you don't worship the Supreme Lord, you don't even get mukti. You fall down. That is why it's Padnanti no Adat. You fall down again. You think you're liberated. Vimukta manina. You think you're liberated. But you offend the Lord. You don't accept the lotus feet, and you fall down. So they get to the top of, you know, sattva, and they think they're going to get liberated, but they don't worship the Lord, and they offend the Lord and say he's got a material body. They fall down. They don't get mukti.
Second question was that those who get sarupya mukti, it's not the highest. So the question is, can they go higher, and how can they go higher?
Well, according to Vishnu Chakrabart, they're kind of fixed once they've done that.
That's it, finished.
Yeah.
End of the road.
Yeah, they're up there with their nice spiritual body and nice, wonderful palaces. And they meditate on the Supreme Lord, but they don't meet him. But they're satisfied. Because their sadhana was kind of like that, you know, because they had mixed bhakti, karma, Mr. Bhakti, or whatever. Again, Mr. Bhakti's a little better. They meet the Lord, but it's Shantarasa. So they don't really serve, even they meet him. They're like sages in the spiritual world, in some sages. If they get association with devotees, then they become pure bhaktas. Otherwise, if it's Gyan Misra Bhakti, that's another thing, then they get Shantarasa. If they associate with pure devotees, then they become Suda Bhaktas, and then they get, you know, Dasya, Rasa, or whatever, higher Rasas.
Not from Suyuja, from Sarupya?
No, no.
Okay, here's my last question.
Yeah.
Lord Brahma, we can understand by Brahma Sangita,
yeah,
that he's a devotee, no doubt.
Yeah, yeah.
You say the people on Brahma Loka, they go with Lord Brahma.
Yeah.
Where do they go with Lord Brahma?
Well, it depends. The Brahmas also are, there are different types of Brahmas according to the universe and whatnot.
The one we're talking about.
Yeah. Well, he's a devotee of the Lord, and at the beginning of his first day, the Lord said, "You will not follow Maya." So, you know, he's very special. He got special blessings. So he, of course, is a great devotee of the Lord, participates in the Lord's pastimes, etc. So he obviously goes to the spiritual world, Vaikuntha.
But only Vaikuntha.
Yeah. Well, if it's a Brahma Samhita, if he gets the realization of Krishna, then I suppose he can enter Dasya Rasa or something like that.
That was my question.
Yeah. If he gets a realization of Krishna and develops that attraction, then he goes there.
Well, he seems to bring Manjana to That's why I'm saying it. He seems to be at that level of the highest understanding.
Yeah.
Another question there is that we know the Brahma Maharaj was Sampradaya. The head of the Sampradaya himself is not sure of going back, like how he would follow something.
What's that?
The Brahma may not go back, according to Brahma. So we are in the Sampradaya, and how the disciples are disabled, they can get prepared and go back to Krishna.
Brahma is also Guna Avatar. So he's definitely not in the modes of nature like us, even though he's in charge of Rajagun. Obviously, if he was a Rajagun, he'd be like this in this chapter. There's attached to karmas, etc. But he's not. He's the creator of everything. So he's higher than all the devatas. He's higher than the sages and Janaloka and Tapaloka. He's much, much higher than that. So he's a very, very elevated soul as a jiva. And he's also empowered by the Lord to carry out material creation. So he has very high qualification. And in the case of Brahma Samhita, he also has realization of Krishna. Very high position.
So we're really speaking about the position of the devotees. Does it depend on our hierarchy between what fortunate people are fortunate?
Depends on?
Basically, people are fortunate. So how to get pure state of pure devotees? Is there something to do with prayers by
Well, when we talk about piety, we have to understand what piety is, because it's a little ambiguous sometimes. Punya is in the same sattva gun things is not does not produce bhakti or association or mercy of devotees. That itself doesn't do it. The devotee can be merciful to someone in tamagun also. So it's not sattva that creates that the mercy, and it doesn't it's not a cause for the devotees to give also simply because you're sattvic or whatever. My bodies are also sattvic in many ways. They're vegetarians or whatever, so they don't get mercy. So. That type of punya is not the cause of bhakti or the cause of faith or anything. The real cause of faith is only mercy of devotees, wherever it falls. But usually it takes many, many births. So it's kind of like punya, but it accumulates birth after birth. We say the best of punya is in one sense, because it's nirguna, it's beyond sattva-guna. And it accumulates birth after birth. One gets mercy or unconscious contact with bhakti, like seeing the deity or hearing a kirtan or hearing the name of the Lord or getting prasadam or whatever. Yeah, it just goes on birth after birth until the Atma develops faith. When the Atma develops faith, that faith becomes, not necessarily, becomes strong enough that it becomes conscious. But then you use your intelligence to inquire, not about anything except Supreme Lord. And then you go to devotees and get knowledge from scriptures, etc. So that faith is usually a process of gradual development of a gyata sukriti over many births, which is bhakti, but unconscious. Not that we want to do bhakti because we don't have any faith.
You mentioned Uttarayanam, Dakshinayanam, Shita, Baksha, Krishna.
Yeah.
Is a bhakti yoga transcendental to these?
Yeah. Because, in any case, there's a whole discussion of what does this mean? Is it because time? Is it time's affect you? So the commentaries of the acharyas say it's not time, these are the devatas that meet you on the way. And so the only way you're going to meet the Uttarayana devata and the Purnima devata or the Sukla Paksha devata, etc., is if you do the activities for liberation, that is jnana or whatever, and if you do the activities for Pritras, then you get the Pitras and the Dark Moon, etc. David is coming to meet you, and you go back to the material world after going to Svargaloka, etc. So, it's not time as much as Devatas, and the Devatas are determined by your sadhanas. So if you do Jnana, you get liberation, and if you do, you know, Karma Yoga, you get rebirth in the material world. So Bhakti is superior to both processes because it's superior to liberation also.
So they have no higher effect.
Yeah. So anyways, it's not time anyway. It's not a time factor thing. And even the Devadas isn't a concern for the devotees of the Lord. That actually comes from, I think, the Chandogya Upanishad, this whole discussion of death and the whole process and what happens after that. So it's elaborately described there. But the devotees actually, because they develop bhakti, of course, they could also go two ways, it's said. You can go to the material with two ways. Krama, if you still do Nishkama Karma Yoga, but without attachment, you know, completely, just doing it as a duty, then it's, Baladeva says you go upwards to the heavenly planet, you go up that way, and you can look at everything, satisfy your curiosity, go up to Brahmaloka, and then go out. Or if you just practice devotion with no karma mixture at all, then you just directly go out into the spiritual world, and none of these Devadas are involved at all in that.
No temptations along the way.
Yeah, okay.
Even devotees may have material desires. They want more jnana. Unless they worship Krishna, then they will not feel like about these things.
Well, hopefully a person, if they're doing devotional service, if they have a mixture, if they follow the correct process in the sampradaya, a bhakti sampradaya, which practices pure bhakti, they'll become purified of those tendencies, karma, misra, or jnana, misra, bhakti, they'll become purified of that.
Like Guru Maharaj had a material desire.
Yeah. Well, that was special. Well, you got the mercy of Narada Muni. Also, it was very special there. But when then the Lord was merciful and he showed himself, then he became purified. So it's Kripa also, the example of Kripa. The mercy of the Lord himself purified him. And then he gave up his desires. Since pure bhakti is the ultimate spiritual life, why is the Shastra described, why is it Shastra describes the lower levels karma again? Well, yeah, that's why the Bhagavatam at the beginning says this work will reject all the cheating dharmas. karma, Gyan, and Astanga Yoga. Those are the main ones. So many other things are there, but those are the main ones. So it rejects them. But yet we'll see in the Bhagavatam that we have Karma Yoga described. We have Gyan Yoga described. We have Astanga Yoga described here. This place is Astanga Yoga described several times, and 11th canto is elaborately described also. Second canto is describing Astanga Yoga again. Huh? And then we have Gyan Yoga, of course, 11th canto prominently, and also previous chapters. Kapila describes Jnana again. So Jnana is very prominent also, and the karma is displayed here also, and in 7th canto, Prahlad discusses in detail karma yoga. So yes, why are they there at all? So the whole idea is that by reading the whole work, one will understand the conclusion, and therefore one will not become confused. On the other hand, if one is not a devotee, then the truth will be hidden. So the purpose of Sukadeva is to give the truth to the devotees and hide it from the other people. So he's very merciful, but at the same time, some people don't accept that mercy. So then he satisfies them with other things as well. So therefore there is karma for the karmis, and jnana for the jnanis, and yoga for the yogis. Of course, in the assembly where Sukadeva was speaking, there was a mixture of all sorts of people. So in this way, these different people were satisfied. Hopefully, by being satisfied, they will also continue listening, and then they will hear the pastimes of Krishna, and then they will develop attraction for Krishna and give up everything else. So that is the hope. But nevertheless, things are there to, in one sense, hide the truth from the less qualified people, and at the same time, give them some sort of bridge by which they can access Krishna.
Yes, Srila Vyasadeva is a clear incarnation of Krishna. Why is he just like that another morning? He's making all the activities.
Oh, well, this is Leela. They're both avatar. Narada Muni's also avatar.
Vatra Vegam, that's Proto Vegam, then there's Unita Vatra Vegam. Are these Vegams? Prabhupada said that the Vegams are there because when you have a human body, you have them.
Yeah.
Are they the same as desires?
Well, ultimately, the whole root of everything is ignorance, avidya, or ajnana. And then this gives rise, and that ajnana means actually we want to enjoy the material world, so it's the tendency of the jiva, ajnana. Okay? And then he gets ahankara and subtle body and gross body. Okay? And then that manifests in the mind as specific desires for specific things. And when you don't get the desires, then you develop anger and so many other things. So then we get the kama, krodha, lobha, and all these other things coming out in the vegas as a result of the ignorance. So it originates in the jiva and goes through transformations through mind, intelligence, and so many other things. Ahamkara. But basically, it's all the jiva's tendency to be a separate enjoyer.
But if we have these vegams in this body, we're bhakti yogis.
Yeah.
And what happens at the end? Are they connected to desires? That's my question.
Which desires?
The
Vegas are simply aspects of the desire. We get certain senses, and then they have certain urges because of our desires. So ultimately, you have to give up the material body. But one who's a yogi manages to control the body in such a way that the desires also get minimized, and then should go down to zero. The jnani also is supposed to do that. So therefore, ultimately, they destroy the subtle body by the process of either jnana or yoga, and they stop the functioning of the mind, etc., and they bring it to a point where it doesn't empty. That means no more desires.
So it comes from the subtle body then?
Yeah, but ultimately from the jiva.
Is the jiva not neutral?
No. The jiva has a desire to join the material world, therefore he gets all this stuck on him. So we've got to blame the jiva ultimately, not the mind. Mind is only functioning because of the desire of the jiva. Jiva desires to enjoy the material world, then the karma acts and all the stuff acts on him, and he gets all these coverings, grossly subtle. But bhakti itself is described here previously in a previous chapter, that bhakti destroys the subtle body also, automatically. But that's not the goal of bhakti. That's the goal of jnana and yoga, to destroy the subtle body and get liberation. The goal of the devotee is not that. So it acts a little differently. The subtle body is destroyed because the jiva gives up its tendency to enjoy for itself and instead develops prema, love for Krishna. So automatically there's no enjoyment. So then what's the use of a gross body or a subtle body at that point? And therefore it's also rejected. Narada Muni is the incarnation of Krishna. Narada Muni is the Shaktivesh avatar. But he's also in the spiritual world. Shaktivesh avatars are also in the spiritual world, so they're eternal.
Devaki, after following all the instructions of Kapila Deva, she goes only to Vaikuntha.
Where should she go?
Where?
She doesn't worship Krishna. She worships Vishnu. Just like Prahlad is worshiping Vishnu.
Hanuman
worshiped Ram, so he goes to Ram.
Yeah, it's not Vishnu, it's not Krishna.
Yeah. Well, depends on who you worship when you go there. Most in Bhagavatam, before Krishna appears, they'll be worshipping, Vishnu. They go to Vishnu, and the Manus, etc., are worshipping Vishnu.
Is there a distinction between Narayan and Vishnu?
Same.
Exactly the same.
Yeah.
Just a different word for the exact same thing.
Yeah.